everybody. I'm still here, fiddling with some instruments. Enjoy the music. This is 94.7 WPVC Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Welcome to Apropos of Something, airing every Saturday morning from 10 to 11, co-hosted by me, Ellen Daniels, in our Charlottesville studio, and Nancy Lawrence from our studio in New York City. We seek out the most interesting people we can find with a passion for social justice, political activism, and the arts, and we guarantee every show will be apropos of something. As always, we're grateful for the sponsorship of the Beckham team at Keller Williams Realty. Today, we are talking to Charlotte Matthews and Betsy Cox, accomplished women who ventured beyond the scope of their careers to create something extraordinary. Matthews is an author of exquisite poetry, a novelist, and a professor. Cox, an Emmy-winning filmmaker. Together, they've created a multimedia project using poetry, film, and the internet to help women impacted by cancer. Their endeavor is called Whistle Words, the only project of its kind offering writing workshops for women, as the two say, for women who have never written and those who have always written. Betsy Cox is an Emmy award-winning filmmaker, creator of Red Spark Films, a documentary film production company focusing on social issues, including poverty, justice, family violence, and healthcare. Together, Matthews and Cox are creating a feature-length documentary about women reclaiming their voices after cancer threatens to silence them. And we are also lucky to have comedian, performer, writer Julia Lundy, who spent time in New York City doing stand-up. She's also working as a secondary instructor for a seminar at UVA, University of Virginia, that focuses on storytelling as a means for scientists to share their research and make it accessible to a lay audience. Check out all our past shows. They all go up as podcasts on the station website, 947wpvc.org. Nancy, my friend, my colleague, are you there?
I'm here. I'm still here. I'm here.
Right.
Hey, you know, thank you for asking. I guess you could just continue the show without inviting me in. Just occurred to me. Phew.
That would never happen.
You know, well, okay. All right. You've declared it now to the air waves, so they will find you. You know, you do always mention the arts in our intro, and I actually have, if I may, a piece of art at the top of the show. Did you hear about the White House had asked the Guggenheim to borrow a Van Gogh painting?
Yes.
Did you hear about this?
Yes. Go on.
Trump's private, yes, their living quarters.
Yes.
But I bet all right, let's just say you hadn't.
I know. I bet no one else has heard this.
I can tell you.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so you've heard, right, so the chief curator there denied, Nancy Spector, denied their request, but offered instead an 18-carat, fully functioning solid gold toilet, mm-hmm, an interactive work entitled America, of all things, and when she wrote them back saying, you know, that they couldn't honor the request for the Van Gogh, she said, we're sorry not to be, I'm sure she had a much tighter tone, but she said, we're sorry not to be able to accommodate your original request, the curator said, but remain hopeful that this special offer may be of interest.
Yes.
But that was just so amazing.
It's a real thing. It's a million dollar piece of art by Maurizio,
right,
Catalan, and it's been on display in a unisex restroom on the museum's fifth floor in the Guggenheim.
Yeah, we read the same thing. I got it. I know.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I couldn't believe that they had it as the perfect comeback, because of course, whatever the Trumps requested, you're never getting that painting back. They're just gonna, they're not returning it. But anyway, that they had that, the toilet on, on layaway as the perfect, yes,
it's one-liner. It's a perfect metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So I saw Joy Reid this week in Charlottesville, and she is brilliant. She spoke about a million different things. She's so smart. She wove in history. She talked about Charlottesville being a flashpoint defining this era. She talked about Trump's refusal to condemn white supremacists and neo-Nazis here, and she thought it would be a defining moment in his presidency.
Yeah, which I have to say, I'm sure she did. She go into the bleep hole countries as well, because
Yeah.
Speaking. Yes.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, she just talked about everything, and her message was really how to be the change. And there was so much there. It really was like a history lesson. But about how to be the change, she said patience is important. That change is really slow. It's okay as long as we're moving forward, which is in question. But she said that we need to talk to other people, not only in those in our own tribe, and that, you know, the word intersectionality that we bandy around a lot is spoken about in academia. But what that really is just compassion for other people. So that those are some of the takeaways.
Did she was she pushing a book or something or other, or was she?
Oh, I wouldn't say pushing. That. But she's written a book, yeah. But I think she's traveling a lot. It was the keynote of our MLK celebration here, and I saw that she was doing the same other places. And she got a standing ovation before she even uttered a word, and at the end.
Oh, yeah. That's great. That's great you got to go. That's amazing she was she was there. Was it mostly college-y, or was it,
no,
what do you think?
No, it was not college-y at all. It was a little bit, you know, in the... I don't know, tips.
It was an intersectionality.
Yeah,
tell me,
it was,
please.
Actually.
I'm counting on her.
It actually was.
That way she draws them in.
Yeah, it was kind of a mixed... Yeah, it was good. It was a good crowd. So there's a lot to talk about. One thing I wanted to talk about was now that there's evidence that the New York Times reported that Trump was going to fire Mueller, and we have an open investigation and good evidence for obstruction of justice.
You know... Yeah, if you ask me, which you didn't really, but I think this case has been made about obstruction of justice. I guess I get that it's only getting stronger, but just I don't know what they're waiting for. I know he has to be thorough.
Yeah.
Just like,
I don't think it's going to be long.
Quite remarkable.
Yeah, I think Malcolm Nance predicts March. But anyway,
oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I think that's what he's saying.
Okay.
Anyway, so. Let's get to our guests, because they have a lot to say, and although I did want to mention one event going on, I'll talk about it a little later, I think.
You know what? I have
or
one.
Do you have one? Okay. Go ahead.
No, you know what? I just saw the time. Never mind. Never mind.
We're so
easy-breezy,
like
away.
Just, you know, chatting away here. We have an outstanding show. As I mentioned, our guests are Charlotte Matthews and Betsy Cox. Matthews is an author of poetry. She's a novelist, professor at the University of Virginia in the Bachelor of Interdisciplinary Studies program. She has written 3 books of poetry and a novel. Charlotte sometimes may be found sitting with a 1941 Corona typewriter in public settings, like the Farmer's Market, pressing down on heavy keys for passersby, offering them a poem right on the spot. Can't wait to talk to her about that. And 12 years ago, she was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer at the age of 39. We'll discuss how writing helped her and how it's helping other women during and after cancer treatment. And we have Betsy Cox, who is a colleague. They work together. She's an Emmy-winning filmmaker, creator of Red Spark Films, documentary film production company, which focuses on social issues. Together, they've created a multimedia project using poetry, film, and the internet to help women impacted by cancer, as I mentioned. Their project is Whistle Words, the only project of its kind, I believe, offering writing workshops for women who have never written, and those who have always written. The website is whistlewords.org if you want to check it out while you're listening. Welcome, Charlotte and Betsy.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
Yes. So first, Charlotte, can you talk about how you first got the idea for this project, Whistle Words, just a year ago, I believe, and it's still growing. How did it come to be?
Well, I feel very strongly that writing can help restore a sense of self, and I've felt that for a long time. And where whatever obstacle one may be facing, it helps to remind yourself of the power that is innate and that you have. And Betsy and I are friends from yoga, and I approached her knowing about her film work, her amazing film work, and asked her if she would make just maybe a small like promotional film to help me maybe launch doing some writing workshops, because I've had this dream since my diagnosis and my treatment to work with women who are undergoing treatment. I got amazing medical care, stellar medical care, and tenderness. And I was yearning for something, and although I'm not a big makeup wearer, I even went to the class Look Good, Feel Better, which is offered by the hospitals. It sort of teaches you how to put on mascara and stuff and wear your wig right, which I failed at. But I thought there's still something missing. I went to that class just to be in fellowship with other women who are going through a similar thing that I was. And I thought, wow, what tool and writing can be if everyone could just be given a little bit of power, because cancer really, once you're diagnosed, there's a good bit of passivity to it, that you're given your staging, you're given your treatment plan, and it's something just to endure. And I thought, what if you could do something?
And these, the Whistle Words project came out of these workshops that you were also doing, the writing workshops? Was it one thing and then the other? They come together at the same time?
I had not yet started anything. This was just a dream. You know, you wake at 4 a.m, you're like, what would I like to do? I'd like to help women who are going through treatment write. And so Betsy and I together started Whistle Words.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what happens in those workshops, or what if, you know, if I wanted to join, let's say, or somebody did, what would they encounter? What can they expect?
They can expect a lot of fun. And actually, at the introduction, when you guys were bantering, you used the word remarkable. And I think there's a remarkable sort of sense of fellowship and camaraderie in the room. So they can expect on a practical level that they will be given exciting prompts. So I might present them with, well, you were talking about artwork, Van Gogh's Room in Arles. And I would say, I would ask all the participants, is the room crooked? Why is the room crooked? Who's sitting in the chair? Are you sitting in the chair? And so as a way to enter into a deeper discussion about thoughts and feelings without, so you would not expect, what you'd not expect would be for me to say, so how does it feel like to have cancer? Mm-hmm. That's not at all how it is. It's much more creative and sort of entering through the side door.
And, you know, since you reference us, I was going to actually reference you. You have mentioned that writing is the tool and not the goal. So what do you mean by that?
And that's a very important element of Whistle Words, that we want to make sure that women know that even if you might seem reluctant to write, that it's, the goal is not for you to walk away necessarily as a stronger writer. A tool, meaning that which can help you get to your goal of restoring your sense of self, reclaiming your sense of wholeness. So through the writing, revealing to yourself, and also this sense of being heard, that always in the workshops, there is the opportunity to, although not the demand, to share what you've written that day. And it's always a chance, and I will go around and ask if, I'll go around the circle and say, everyone can either share part of, all of, or just say skip. And in that being heard, there's a great power.
How do you get women to, there's some really great quotes on your website and things that, you know, one of them is, it makes me feel heard in a world that does not always listen. I think the beauty of poetry is when it's so true. How do you encourage women to get to that? Or someone who, like I said earlier, who've never written before?
Through prompts that are so sort of alluring that you, let me give an example. That's probably the best way. I ask everyone to think of a room. It could be their childhood bedroom. It could be a basement at a friend's house. And then I ask them a litany of questions about that room. And something ultimately is revealed to them that they didn't even recognize, or I should say us, I write with the women, we're all together writing, that I didn't even realize that I'd remembered the mustard-colored flecked rug in my childhood bedroom. And then that might evoke something else.
Mm-hmm. And so, again, the workshops, you can be, one can attend the writing workshops, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're involved with the Whistle Works project. Is that right? Are they separate?
Well, this is Betsy now, so let me launch off onto that one.
Yep.
So the project is all one and the same. However, we are not filming every workshop, and certainly that part of it is something that a woman involved with WhistleWords wouldn't necessarily have to take part in. So the writing workshops right now that are existing in several different locations and also are online are not being recorded or documented as part of the larger film, although we do expect to start filming soon. So, but the work that results from the workshops is going onto the website, which creates this platform for other women to share in the writing that's coming out of the workshops. So that's another way to be involved in the project, even if you're not physically in the room. So it is being shared in that way. So we're creating a body of work as we go, even when the filming isn't taking place.
And Betsy, what is your vision for the film?
Well, you know, that's a really great question, and I can sort of come at it from a couple of different ways, because when Charlotte initially approached me about the project, and like she said, she was just had this dream and was hoping I could maybe help her do a 2-minute piece that would be of use for her in gaining entry into some cancer centers to hold the workshops. I read her book of poetry and thought, what an amazing thing if there was a chorus of women's voices talking about all of the complex aspects of having cancer and the effects on their lives. So initially was this idea of using the work that came out of workshops, hopefully with women from all walks of life, and creating this sort of chorus. Since we started the workshops, it's evolved a little bit, and we see it as part process. So seeing the women in the workshops, hopefully part personal story, several women who are integrally involved, who begin to see writing as a way to really get at the root of so much that is going on in their lives. So following those women, and part the beautiful work that results. So I think of it a little bit like visual poetry in a way. I think it can be really lovely. And we did do a trailer based on one of Charlotte's own poems that looks back at her diagnosis and the resulting mastectomy. And that'll give you a little bit of a sense of what I mean by visual poetry.
Could one of you read something?
Sure, I would be happy to. I'll read a poem entitled Why Humpty Dumpty Fell that's from my book Whistle What Can't Be Said. There were three girls jumping double dutch on the blacktop below him, and he looked down because even their voices sounded nimble. This made him remember the way his mother sang him to sleep at night, each star in the sky reliably framed in a hexagon from their wire coop. He fell because, like all of us, he wanted to know if someone would care enough to try to put him back together again.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you, Charlotte. We're going to take a break right now. We'll come back and we'll talk more with Charlotte Matthews, poet, and Betsy Cox about their project Whistle Words. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Apropos of Something. This is 94.7 WPVC. We're the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking with Charlotte Matthews and Betsy Cox. Charlotte just read a poem. I wanted to talk more about the workshops. Let us know, Betsy, if you would, what's involved and what you want us to hear about them.
Well, I think the workshops, often when you come to the website and you see this lovely body of work that's resulting, you think, oh, you know, it can be intimidating because the poetry there is really beautiful. But what I feel is really important to underscore is that the workshops, when you come in, as Charlotte talked about a little bit, these really interesting prompts that have nothing to do with necessarily with your cancer experience, and they're just free-form writing responses. So really, it's just thinking through your pen, letting your pen flow over paper without criticizing yourself or thinking about the words that you're choosing. I mean, she's really, Charlotte's wonderful with telling you it's just about getting stuff out. So it's sort of you know, this great opportunity to just be unrestricted and just see where it goes. And then when women start to share, Charlotte is listening and scribbling down words and phrases, and that's where the group poem comes out. So it's sort of this collective response. So it's this lovely little nugget that you sort of walk away with. But what the women have is this journal of their own thoughts. I mean, it's like this, you know, free form thought process that allows you to get at aspects of what's going on in your life that maybe you weren't even aware you were thinking. So one of the women who was in a workshop that we did at UVA back in December, who came in, and she was responding to actually a prompt that Charlotte mentioned about just imagine a room. And she started with her bedroom. And, you know, it starts out, you know, four walls, yellow, whatever. And then as you keep writing, it goes into all of these really deep things about the sanctuary, where I go to hide, where I go to restore, where I go to think, and turns into something much, much deeper. And she walked away from that workshop saying, wow, I have a lot of stuff going on that I wasn't even thinking about yet. And that's where the power comes in. It's just, and that's why we say a tool, not a goal, because all it is allowing you to get at something that, you know, is so layered that maybe you haven't been able to dig down yet.
Yeah, and it's, you're saying it's so human. It's, you don't have to be, you don't have to have a special gift or talent to do it. Everyone has the ability to do it, and you guys are helping bring that out.
Yeah, you just need a pencil.
Yeah.
Let it go. Nobody has to read it but you, you know?
It's whistlewords.org if people want to go to their website.
And when is the next workshop or workshops? When are they being offered? Where are they?
We're starting a workshop series at the University of Virginia. It'll be the first of two, and hopefully we'll be continuing. And that's going to start on Friday, February 2nd. We're not holding it at the Cancer Center. We're holding it off-site at the University Baptist Church on Main Street. And it's from 10 to 11:30 a.m. on Fridays. And it'll run February 2nd through March 9th.
Six weeks.
That's okay, cool. And Betsy, I was wondering, when you started working on Whistle Words as, you know, as a documentary, has your focus, did you always know how you want to present all of this creativity, or have you, you know, the more you hang out with these women, has it changed the way you want to put the film together?
Oh, sure, yeah, and I think it will continue to change. I think a project has to evolve, because if I, you know, if my idea of it at the beginning is what I ended up with, then I'm forcing my own perception of what this story is. And the story's going to come out of the women and their women's experiences. So it's evolved a lot. I mean, even for Charlotte and me, I mean, just how we conceptualized the project a year ago. Wouldn't you say, Charlotte?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's crazy. We say all the time to each other, like, look at how far we've come. So, you know, and it is a collaborative project. I mean, it's collaborative between Charlotte and me, certainly, but it's a collaboration with the women who are part of the workshops. Absolutely. They're going to help shape the story.
I'm curious about the name. How did Whistle Words come about?
Well, it came, the title of my book is entitled Whistle What Can't Be Said, because I think sometimes there aren't words to say the things that matter the most to us privately. But sometimes whistling can also keep us company. And so as we were coming up, I guess one day we just, over a cup of coffee, we were like, well, what are we going to call this? Like, oh, whistle words. So that's how it.
So maybe this is a good entree to your work, Charlotte. Just wanted to talk a little bit about it. You've written your third collection of poetry recently, Whistle What Can't Be Said, as you said. You also have Still Enough to Be Dreaming, Green Stars. I just wanted to read a little bit about what someone has said about your work, and author Ira Sadoff. She writes, with candor, craft, and courage, Charlotte Matthews writes intimate poems that refuse to skate over the trials of childhood. She perseveres through absence, illness, and loss, earning the rich and poignant claim, most of what I care about is invisible, which is the line from one of your works, correct?
That is correct. And one element with sort of moving from my own work to the work with the women that Betsy said earlier, the idea of this unrestricted and the pen just keeping moving One, I sort of see myself a little bit as a Sherpa in these writing workshops, where I'm carrying for those 90 minutes, those 6 weeks, some of the burden for the women, and listening to what they share, what they feel comfortable sharing from those free-form, unrestricted scribblings in the notebooks that we get. And if I can, I wanted to read a part of one of the... So this is a collaborative group poem. Words,
yeah,
these are all the words from the women that then became a poem, and that's the poems you see on the website. And this is called One Small Moment at a Time. It's still me, still my life, the wind whipping around, the water serene. Remind me of the waves, the wind, little girls and boys, crabs scuttling into holes. I'm on the beach with hair, and someone thinks I hung the moon. And I just wanted to underscore that that was an assignment where I asked them to choose a body of water and to write everything that was in the water and everything about the water. And these are the voices of the women collaboratively in a poem.
Have you yourself, Charlotte, always, as far as your writing, been interested in poetry, or are you writing other things and you haven't yet revealed that to us?
I have been a poet for a long time, but I just did finish a novel, and I'm working on a memoir.
Whoa.
Great.
Okay, so you have to come back and read excerpts from both of those.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I really got interested in your work, in learning about you, so I'm really excited. And where can people find those books? From your website that I mentioned? Whistle Words.
Yes, we could find them there, and also... on Amazon, my books are available that way.
It looked like it was out of stock on Amazon, which it could be a good thing, but FYI,
I will
the new one.
Okay, yeah.
Order some more.
My publisher, Unicorn Press, out of UNC Greensboro, hand sews every one of them.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm not surprised, but I'll tell him.
Hand sewn. That's amazing.
And Betsy, I know you have Red Spark Films, so what other kinds of work happens there for you at your company?
Well, you guys did such a great job with the introduction. So, yeah, we're a social issue production company. I do a lot of work in the area, as you all pointed out, poverty, education, healthcare, a lot of women's issues. I work with nonprofit organizations who may need short form pieces for fundraising, promotion, the web, galas, that type of thing. And I also do feature-length documentaries about issues, you know, stories that I'm passionate about. And every project I really try to approach as a collaboration, because the subject matter is often focusing on individuals who've never had the opportunity to have their voices heard before. So this is often the first opportunity to have a platform to talk about issues that are very personal and often very difficult. So it's media for advocacy.
Is it your vision visually on the website, or is that also a collaborative? I know the content is both of you, but I was just wondering if visually is that you as well, Betsy, or is that both?
It's me. I actually am doing the website.
No, it's good. I'm curious.
Yeah, eventually we hope to grow enough so that we'll actually have a staff of people. But right now, I'm the
one
person.
Oh, that's why you're laughing. Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. But I will point out that the artwork there, which I think is what really gives the website such a wonderful, warm feel, is done primarily by a local artist here in Charlottesville who's just fabulous, and a friend of Charlotte's named Misty Mon. And so if you go there and you know, immediately are drawn in, I think a lot of that is due to Misty's amazing talent. And when we were looking at her work, we just felt it was the perfect accompaniment to the writing of the women.
Thank you so much. Nancy, did you want to ask
something? I do. Actually,
yeah,
Charlotte,
I
want to know what the big picture plans are for Whistle Words and how people can help.
They're here.
Charlotte's looking at me saying I should talk. But
I knew I didn't say a swear word. I was wondering.
I'm not a very practical person, so Betsy's a little more practical, so how people can help.
See, this is why our pairing works. She's the creative and I'm the nuts and bolts, huh? And actually, she could speak to this, so feel free to jump in, Charlotte, as I talk about it. I guess I would say the ultimate goal for the project, you know, Charlotte wants to do the work. So she's doing these online workshops every week, and she's doing these on-location workshops, and we're forming partnerships with other organizations that are already working with women, such as a great one called Here for the Girls. They work with women 50 and younger who have been diagnosed, and we're doing a retreat in Sandbridge with them in a couple of months. So the goal is to continue those workshops, ultimately, just start filming those workshops. But when the end result will be to create the documentary film, a facilitator's guide based out of everything Charlotte has been doing, and also an anthology of the work that results of it, and package it all together to enable the project to be replicated anywhere. What we would like to see happen is make writing accessible to women anywhere in the country. And Charlotte's one person, she can't be everywhere.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I just wanted to say, too, that I read that people that participate, if they don't want to be on film, they don't have to. So it's not to be a deterrent.
That's absolutely true. We wanted that to be made incredibly clear. And also, if people aren't able to come in person to the workshop at the Emily Kerr Cancer Center, across where they're being held across the street, every Sunday night at 7 o'clock, with just one easy click of the button, they can join an online, hour-long online workshop for free that I lead.
That's fantastic. I was going to ask you that. So if you're not in Charlottesville and you're listening, you can participate that way.
Or if you don't want to get out of your pajamas on Sunday night, grab your cup of tea and join us.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys both so much for being here. Betsy Cox and Charlotte Matthews with whistlewords.org. Thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you
so much.
And they're off to Seaville Weekly photo shoot. So good press is happening, I think.
Thank you.
Goodness.
So I want to get a picture of those two. So Nancy, if you wouldn't mind just chatting for a little bit about your news of note.
Let me divert attention over to Trump's latest business decision while you do that. His latest blow to clean energy over the during last week was a 30% tariff on imported solar panels. Nearly every solar panel that will be put on a roof in the U.S. therefore just got more expensive. And why that also matters is because most of the solar companies here are installing them and not manufacturing them. So 8 out of 10 solar panels that come in from the U.S. from abroad, that's going to affect all these companies and their bottom line. So his brilliant new tariff will hurt more companies here than help, since most of the companies employ, the installation ones employed like 260,000 people, and versus like 1,300 of the manufacturing.
Just fantastic.
I know. They anticipate that it's going to be more expensive for consumers, and the interest in solar energy for consumers is going to drop like 10% because of this tariff. Mm. What do you got?
Thanks for sharing. Well, I have a follow-up story of something that I reported on a few weeks ago. A French supermarket chain discounted Nutella by 70%, and all heck broke loose. People rushed in, shoving everyone, breaking things. It was, and I quote, a virtual orgy. Police were called into one location. It was all because Nutella was reduced 70% from with the equivalent of $5.60 to $1.75.
Oh,
Nutella.
Goodness.
Yeah. So a few weeks ago, I talked about how Nutella.
Well, for bacon, Nutella, I would imagine.
Nutella changed its recipe, and I guess that was not a deterrent.
What?
I told you that a while back on the air. That was one of my palate cleansers. They changed the recipe. Yeah. They added more sugar and stuff. But anyhow, that's my news. It's kind of like a palate cleanser, just to brighten things up again, or a little. But I wanted to get to our next guest,
yes,
Nance. What
please.
Do you think?
Of course. Of course.
So we have in our studio Julia Lundy. Julia?
Yes.
is. She's just raring to go. She's raring to go. Hold on now. All right. She's a, let me give you an introduction. The introduction that you so deserve. She's a stand-up comic, performer, and writer who spent time in New York City doing all of that. She's also working as a secondary instructor for a seminar at the University of Virginia that focuses on storytelling as a means for scientists to share their research and make it more accessible to a lay audience. Now, welcome, Julia.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks. So, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Yeah, good start to the morning radio show.
I'm already laughing. I don't know why. I'm just ready to go. Tell us, we're going to go to a break in about a minute. So
okay.
we'll do a short answer and then we'll come back. But this is apropos of something, by the way, people. And Julia is here to tell us a little bit. What was it
Ellen,
like?
Have you been inhaling the Nutella that you're talking? What's going on over there?
I don't, I'm excited. I'm just kind of excited to talk about.
Okay, all right, please. We're running out of time before the break.
I know. To talk about comedy a little bit. What was it like doing stand-up comedy in New York City?
So this is the short answer question.
Yeah, this, we can continue.
I'm trying to think because that's it's great. Stand-up comedy is awesome. You asked how it is in New York City, and how much time do we have before the break?
Sorry, well,
I think you asked me the longest possible.
just pretend we're not having a break, and I'll interrupt you, and then we'll come back.
Okay.
Time's up. We are going to go to a break, and we'll be back with Julia Lundy. Nancy, are you listening?
Whatever you say.
Okay. I know. I'm just biding time.
Ready for my heckle.
Right.
Julia.
Hecklers are coming. This is 94.7 yep. WPVC, the best radio station, because we have apropos of something, lots of other things, great guests. We'll be right back. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Apropos of Something. We air every Saturday from 10 to 11. I'm here with Nancy Lawrence, my co-host all the time. I'm Ellen Daniels, and today we're talking with Julia Lundy. I was asking about stand-up comedy in New York, but really, I want to know how you got started.
All right. So I got into stand-up. I didn't know I wanted to do stand-up. I knew I wanted to write. And I was trying to figure out a medium that worked for me. You know, I was writing some fiction. I was working on a screenplay. And what I didn't like was the things that I were writing were just, they were files on my computer. And I wanted to, you know, air it out more. And I started thinking about doing a solo show. And so I went to see Microbilia's Sleepwalk with Me. I was living in New York City at the time. And he talks about doing stand-up in his one-man show, Sleepwalk With Me. And actually, his stories are quite horrifying. So I walked out of there thinking, oh, my God, why would someone do that to themselves? Like, why would they do stand-up?
Uh-huh.
It seemed so thankless, especially in some of his stories. But there was something about his show. Something clicked, and like a week later, I was like, oh my God, I have to do stand-up. That's it. Like, I figured out my medium.
Really? What were some of his horrifying tales you're talking about?
Oh, well, he was just talking about like doing stand-up for people waiting in a line in a cafeteria. Something like, you know, and that is what a lot of stand-up is like, that you end up doing it in weird venues. I've done, you know, stand up in yoga studios. I've done it in a church.
You've done it in
one?
Yoga.
You said a week later you had to do it.
So a week later I was like, I have to do stand up. And so I think it was about another week after that was the first time I got on stage. And I actually didn't have any material. I went to
now that is funny.
Yeah, so I went. So
wow.
Here's the thing.
And brave.
Here's the thing about open mics in New York City. No one goes to watch them. It's different throughout the country. You'll go to open mics and people, you know, it's a form of entertainment. So you'll have people who aren't stand-ups show up at open mics and they want, you know, want to see what everyone has. But in New York City, that is not the case. The only people at open mics are stand-ups, and they're there waiting to go up. So it's usually, they're always a little bleak, you know, because no one really,
right.
Everyone's got their mind on their own material. And I didn't know this because I had nothing to do with stand-up. So I just showed up at an open mic because I wanted to see what it was like. I wanted to see how does this happen. And my plan was, it was a Wednesday night, and I was so jazzed, too. I was so, like, wired about this. I remember it was pouring outside. I was eating dinner, and I was like, I just need to go to an open mic. I called up this comedy club, and they told us, oh, yeah, we're going to be on for, like, another 40 minutes or so. And I remember just putting my dinner down and, like, getting in a cab, because if I took the subway, I would have missed it. So I like, paid for a cab to race to this open mic. I was, like, so excited about seeing it. And I remember walking in, I was wet from the rain, and I was like, do you guys still have your open mic going? And they're like, yeah, who are you? Like, why are you so excited about this? And they're like, it's $5 if you want to get up. And I was like, no, I'm just here to watch. And then they, you know, I seemed especially weird to them on top of that. And they're like, well, you know, it's free to watch, sit down. And I watched a few comics go up. And again, like I said, no one goes to watch open mics. So they knew there's something going on with this woman. Like, she probably wants to get up. The only reason you'd show up is because you want to do stand up. And they were actually really sweet. The host came over to my table while someone was on stage, and he said, look, we want to see you get up. And we're not gonna have you pay the $5. I talked to the manager. I'm gonna bring one other guy up, and after him, you're gonna do stand up. And I was like, oh, I'm really, really not here to do stand up. And he's like, yeah, you are. We want to see you do it. Yeah, and my plan was to watch the mic and come back in 2 days with material. Of course, it takes a little more than 2 days to iron out material, but, you know, it's an open mic, you get started. So I was definitely very nervous, but to be honest, I was excited because I thought, you know what, why would I refuse this?
Right.
Why would I say no to this?
Yeah, you had a cab ride invested in.
I dropped whatever, 15, 20 bucks to get there.
Yeah.
Also, it was kind of a saving grace because then I only had 5 minutes to freak out as opposed to a whole day, you know, just like getting worked up about getting on stage.
Do you remember what you said?
I did. I got up and I told a story about seeing a whale penis.
Wait, we cannot swear. I'm just...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know if you're going blue. That's not swearing,
was
but...
that? Okay.
It's okay.
No, I'm not going to tell the story,
okay.
Even though it's... That's the bluest
no
part
Lenny
about it.
No Lenny but Bruce.
Yeah, no, that's about
but
as
keep going.
Dirty as it gets.
Okay, keep going. Sorry.
although, yeah, it is classic. No, I mean, I guess that's classic for a beginner to go out and tell penis jokes, but I guess I had my own spin on it because it was a whale's. I remember I talked about that. I talked about, like, my alter ego a little bit. But I remember being on stage, and I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. But I remember also thinking, okay, this is as bad as it gets. You know, I didn't have material worked out. I feel half frozen, but I can do this. Like, this is as bad as it gets, but it's fine. I can actually handle this. And I was like, okay, so I can come back. I can come back and do this again, and it's only going to be better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I went up, they gave me 5 minutes, which felt like an eternity. I think I managed to stretch it out to 4 minutes, and I wanted to get off. And they were like, oh, stay on. And they tried to get me to do crowd work. And so I asked this one guy where he was from, and he said Fairfield, Connecticut, which is where I was from. And I was like, whoa, really? He's like, yeah. And I was like, did you go to Fairfield High? And he was like, yeah, I did. And you think, like, this is the perfect setup. And I was like, cool. And then I got off the stage. I had everything there for something to, you know,
yeah,
something to work with.
How
and
long
I was like,
before you revealed to friends or family or both what you were up to in your evening hours? How long were you keeping it a secret?
I didn't really tell anyone until after I'd done it.
And then did you immediately, or did, so I'm wondering, did you, like, was it the next day?
I waited with my dad. I definitely like held off telling my dad because no, I have to say my dad is extremely supportive and really believes in me. I just was, you know, I knew that it would also scare him. I mean, it's a big gamble to strike out and you know, pursue stand up. There's no safety nets. There's not any money in it. And it's definitely the kind of thing you tell your parents that you're doing stand up. It's a scary thing.
Do you have any favorite, who are your inspirations, or who do you just love as a comedian?
Well, to be honest, I always really got excited about the people I was doing stand-up with, more so than, I mean, there are, you know, the professional comics that we all know that are great, but the ones that inspired me the most were the ones that I was going on stage with, because I could see where they started. I saw how they were developing their jokes, and it was a little more intimate, and so I was a little more moved by their progress and more inspired by the people I was close to.
And have your parents, well, has your father, have your parents seen you?
They have seen me, yeah. Yeah, they've all, everyone I know and love has seen me do stand-up, for sure. It's always scary when you have someone who knows you so well see you do stand-up for the first time. That's definitely weird. And I know a lot of people, when they first do stand-up, they'll be like, let me get my friends to come and support me. And I will say that that's sometimes a bad idea. You want the people in the audience to just not know you. It gives you space to be more yourself on stage, in a way, to kind of explore something new. So,
do you do stand-up in Charlottesville?
I don't do stand-up in Charlottesville, so I'm having a little break right now. I'm on hiatus.
Okay.
And what material do you draw upon for your stand-up?
Well, I draw upon my life. It's not all, you know, it's not all autobiographical, but, you know, my experiences, anything that's where I'm feeling a lot of tension. That's always ripe for comedy. I love talking about animals, to be honest. A lot of my jokes are about animals.
Interesting.
I mean, I love animals. I love people as well. And I just think animals, they're here struggling, same way we are on this planet, trying to make sense of things. I think, you know, people like to talk about the human condition, and I see animals having similar struggles as we do.
Are you a pet owner at currently?
No, sadly, no. I have had dogs. They're no longer with me. Yeah.
That's kind of heartbreaking when that happens.
Oh, yeah, it's the worst.
Have you ever, this is a personal question, mm-hmm. Have you ever seen The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
I have not watched it yet.
It is so good. It's about a comedy, a woman, mm-hmm. a wealthy woman on the Upper West Side of Manhattan in the, I don't know, 50s or early 60s. Mm-hmm. And I really love it. Anyway.
Yeah, I've heard great things about it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I will watch it.
So, Julia, how are you using this comedy talent of yours with this class that you're helping these engineers and chemistry grads get? You know, anyway, how are you tell us rather than me filling that whole question in.
Well,
the class
the class just started, so we're, you know, my role is only slowly starting to emerge. But the point of this class is to help these grad students develop presentations. And, you know, understand who their audience is, so to not get too lost in jargon if, you know, their audience is largely politicians, you know, who aren't, you know, they're not in the same field that they are in. So I'm going to be using my experience in storytelling to help them find a narrative in their research and to work on some stage presence. And that's going to show up a little bit later in the class. So right now, I'm assisting with, you know, putting together some material, looking up, they've got to apply for NSF grants. So we're looking at, the NSF puts a very strong emphasis on this, on broader impacts. When you apply for a grant, you need to show how your research in some way will broadly impact society. You know, how can it, you know, what are the benefits that, you know, people outside of, you know, research will see? And that's because, you know, the NSF is publicly funded, so they kind of want to see a return on investment for the public.
So they pitch these students will be presenting to you as if you were the grant panel or something, and you tell them your reaction to their wonky.
They'll be doing some writing for that, for the broader impacts part. That's a writing assignment. But the spirit, you know, they're still going to have to do some presentations where they will be, they do have to find a way to convince the layperson that their research is relevant and that their research is exciting, that it's something you can get interested in, something that is novel, you know, even if you're not a chemist. So.
But you play one on TV? No.
Okay. What?
But she said, well, go ahead. You play a chemist on TV is what she said.
Thank you. I'm sure it sounded funnier in Virginia than it sounded here. Oh, I'm counting on it.
Oh, well, Julia. Nancy, I always want to, I feel like I didn't want to cut you off. Did you have a question?
I was just going to only ask if, because I happen to know that you too, Julia, have a physics background. So do you think that's going to have an impact on what you're doing with these students, or more about the storytelling aspect?
Well, I think it helps that I did do research. I mean, I was only an undergrad, but I was pretty aggressive about getting into research laboratories. I also took a year off, and I worked at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory as a research student. And I remember seeing a representative from the DOE, Department of Energy, came in to interview all the researchers at this national laboratory, and to not just interview them, but to attend these, there were these presentations that all the scientists had to give, and the member of the DOE would sit in front and grill them. And I remember just watching these PhDs melt, you know, just not being able to handle being in front of people. So, you know, I have my own experience where I see that it's very important for a scientist to be able to get up, speak, you know, be comfortable on stage.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Julia Lundy, stand-up comic, performer, and secondary instructor at UVA.
Yeah, right.
Perhaps you'll come back and deliver us some more comedy. It was kind of a breath of fresh air, really, just to talk about comedy for a while. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
And Nancy, you know what it's time for.
Oh, my goodness.
What?
This is no joke. I do know what it's time for, so please.
It is the palate cleanser.
Such a Calgon take me away kind of moment. And yes, I just dated myself, but perfect.
Yes. So what do you got?
I got this. I got tomorrow morning, 3:30 a.m., Roger Federer has a chance to win his 20th Grand Slam singles title and 6th Australian Open, which would tie him with the record. He's 36. He's playing a 29-year-old, Marin Cilic. He's seated second. Cilic is seated 6th. I'm counting on him, Federer, to win.
Wow, I had no idea.
What do you got?
Well, this is also, it's a palate cleanser and an event, 2 for the price of 1. Because of their viral Twitter conversation, there's going to be a live stream of a conversation between Brené Brown and Black Lives Matter activist DeRay McKesson. They got into something on Twitter, and it's going to be live streamed in New York and Charlottesville on February 1st. It's called The Courage to Show Up. What does talking about courage, shame, and vulnerability have to do with race and privilege? Because Brown is a research professor, and she spent the past 16 years studying courage, vulnerability, empathy, and shame. And so they're going to have what looks to be an interesting conversation, Feb 1, Thursday, from 7 to 8:30. And you have to go and sign up to be part of the live stream, but I think you have to be in person at, here in Charlottesville, it will be Congregation Beth Israel, and in New York, it'll be the Riverside Church, I believe.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. And one other thing I just wanted to mention, there's going to be a super blue blood moon, which sounds foreboding, but it's a real celestial event on January 31st, Wednesday, and you can see it early in the morning, or 7:30 in the morning. It's going to be really bright. It just sounds like maybe that will coincide with some kind of impeachment, I'm hoping. A blue blood moon.
I was going to say, and it will reoccur on election day as well, but I'll take yours. Yours happens first. I'll take it with the impeachment. Yes, yeah. It'll cause the impeachment tide. to increase. There it is.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Yeah. Yes.
Thanks to the Beckham team for their support, Keller Williams Realty. And we'll see you next week, or we'll see you soon, Nance. Thanks.
Sounds good, Ellen.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.